As promised last week, we're going to take another look into the issue of Midrash Esther. We're going to look at it from a different perspective, something new we haven't done before. And that is the relationship between Megillat Esther and Sefer Bereishit, as kind of demonstrated in a few of the many examples from the Midrashim, both Midrash on Bereishit and Midrash on Esther, that connect the two. So I'd like to start with this statement in Masachet Yoma, as you're probably familiar. Perek Chaf Bet of Tehillim is ascribed by Chazal in several places, in the Gemara and Megillah, in Midrash Tehillim, to Esther. Lamnatzeach al Ayelet HaShachar. David and Ayelet HaShachar is understood to be Esther, a reference to Esther, a reference to the story of Esther. Chazal, for instance, identify the fact that she, in the middle of it, says, or the author in the middle, it says, "Save me from the dog," and in the next pasuk says, "Save me from the lion," something of that effect. That Esther had gone into the king, and the Shekhinah had left her. She said, "Maybe it's because I referred to the king as a dog." So she refers to him as a lion, and the Shekhinah comes back. So there's all of these associations with that parak, Ayelet HaShachar, and indeed there's some of Esther's physical attributes are associated with an Ayala. And in that same passage in the Gemara, in Yoma Chavtet, that mentions the association with an Ayala, it says the following, Amar Vasi, Laman Nimshala Esther LaShachar. Why is Esther referred to as Shachar? Shachar, of course, is very, very early morning, and therefore Ayelet HaShachar is a poetic way of referring to Amud HaShachar, the moment of dawn. Lomar Lacha, Ma Shachar, Sof Kol HaLaila, Af Esther, Sof Kol HaNisim. Just like Shachar is the end of the night, similarly, Esther is the end of Nisim. Now, this is an odd kind of analogy, because we think of nighttime as a time of galut, a time of separation from the Shekhinah, and Nisim, of course, is being very much the opposite. But nonetheless, Chazal look at Esther and seem to be making a statement not just about the book, but about the period, and also about the book, and about its place within, in a very large sense, history. And that is that they look at Esther as being sort of the end of that era, which starts at our birth, that era of divine immanence, of feeling God's presence and manifest in a very obvious way, which of course is clear in Bereishit, it's clear throughout Chumash, it's clear in Sefer Yehoshua, it's clear in Sefer Shoftim. It becomes a little less clear in Shoftim and Malachim, but it's still very much there. And we have prophets galore always helping us understand what we see as being in the way that it's connected to God and to Hashgacha, etc. And of course, as time goes by, once we get to the second temple period, we see a greater diminution of that sense of the immanence of God. And there is a lot more manifestation of Malachim, who are there to sort of interpret what's going on. For instance, the Malach HaDoverbi, who helps Zechariah understand his visions. And Esther is right at that period, at the beginning of Bayit Sheni. Esther is around the same time as the last Navi, which is Malachi. And so Esther represents the end of that particular period of divine presence manifest and felt. And of course, by the time we get to Esther, it's hidden, but it's still very much there. And afterwards, we enter a different era. When we enter an era of the Hashmonaim, and then an era of the Chachamim, and then on to the post-millennial times, we have a very different relationship with Chochmah, with Torah. Torah is no longer prophetically given, but it's humanly reasoned out. And we have a different attitude, even if you look at the Maccabim, towards how we fight our battles. But I think that Chazal took this notion of Esther Sof Kol HaNisim also in the Midrashic sense as tying the very beginnings of our history to the very end of this part of history together. not just to create literary bookends and something kind of neat package tied up, but also to see sort of tov acharit davar mirei shito, meaning not the simple pshat of that pasuk, which is the end is better than the beginning, but rather when the end is informed by the beginning, it becomes more powerful. And to see in Bereishit all sorts of allusions dafka to Megillat Esther. I'd like to give a few examples, but I want to start with the last one. Because at the very end of Sefer Bereishit, as you recall, Yaakov calls his sons together and gives them brachot, which are, in some cases, not exactly brachot. They're more like a mishaberach, but they are assignments and tasks and descriptions of the nature of that particular tribe. And if you recall, four of them, five of them, are described as animals. Yisachar Chamor Garim, Naphtali Ayala Shtuchad, Dan is a Nachash. But two of the ferocious ones here are Yehuda, Gur Aryeh, the lion, and Binyamin, Ze'ev Yitraf. And Binyamin, by the way, is at the very end of the list. Now, you might think that Binyamin's at the end of the list because the list goes in order of birth, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, but between Yehuda and Yosef, that's not consistent. So you could argue that Binyamin's at the end because Binyamin's the youngest. Binyamin may also be at the end because Yaakov tends to point something with Binyamin towards the end of this period that he's envisioning. And the bracha he gives to Binyamin is Binyamin Ze'ev Yitraf, which can be read two ways. It can either mean Binyamin is a wolf that devours or that traps its prey, or it could be that Binyamin will trap the wolf. Both of them play out in the Midrash. Baboker yochal ad v'la'erev yechalek shalal. So he will eat in the morning, and at night he will share his loot. In other words, he's the wolf that the predator that preys and then shares his. Is the loot of what he's preyed on and the bounty. Now, watch the Midrash here in Esther Rabbah. Interesting. That Yaakov Avinu Ramza Yaakov alluded to Mordechai and the story of Purim in the bracha given to the Shvatim. Hado Dichtiv Binyamin Zevi Chalad, Ze Shaul, Shaya Yisrael, right, this is referring to Shaul, who's the beginning of Malachim, Vayamishevet Binyamin, Vikat Amalek, Uvazazet Kol Asher Lahem. Now, this, by the way, plays Shaul up to be a great hero for the way he behaved with Amalek, whereas, as we know, that was his downfall. V'la'erev Yechalek Shalal. What will happen in the evening, in the morning? That's Shaul, right? So that Shaul was Bokran Shel Yisrael. He was their morning, right, of Yisrael. Because he was the first of the kings, so in the very early parts. And at the evening, which is at the end, that's Mordechai, the Esther, who were also from Binyamin. Sha'amdu lahem li'Yisrael begalutam. They're the ones who stood by in our exile through Domela Erev, which is like evening. In other words, we're now playing again with the day-night motif that we saw in that first statement of Chazal. But here, it's not that Esther is the end of the night, but Esther is the beginning of the night. And that Esther, meaning the story of Esther and the events of Purim, are the beginning of the exile. And even in that time, Binyamin is the one who gives out the loot, who prays on our behalf. Prays, P-R-E-Y. V'chalku shalal shel Haman. And what did they do? They took Haman's goods and they divided them up. Indeed, what happened to Haman after he was killed? Achashverosh handed all of his property over to Esther, who then handed it over to Mordechai. And now, Shinimshal Lezeev, Shemido HaKadosh Baruch Hu Keneged HaZeev, Eilu Malchei Madayu Farash, Shinimshalu Lezeev. And the Midrash here makes a fantastical statement. It says that the rulers of Madai Paras, remember in the Midrash, Haman's not our only enemy, so is Achashverosh. And the rulers of Madai Paras are compared to a Ze'ev. To a wolf, Hadahudistiv Varocheva Acharei Tanina Dame Ledov. Now, this is from Daniel chapter 11, where we have this crazy vision of Daniel with the four wild beasts, and each one of them midrashically represents, and not just midrashically, represents one of the evil kingdoms that we're going to under whom we're going to suffer. And they read Dov here as Ze'ev, the Dalet and Zion interchanging, which we're familiar with Dalet in Aramaic. Taman Amrin Elu Machewa Dai Farash Ochlin Kedov. So in Bavel, this is the Midrash says, in Bavel, they describe this as a bear, Dov. These are the Persians. They eat and drink like a bear, and they never rest like a bear. Like a bear. And here in Eretz Yisrael, we read Dov as Ze'ev. But the point is that this enemy, we're calling a Ze'ev, that's Aman, Hamid HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kenegdan Mordechai VeEsther Shayu V'Shevet Binyamin. With Dichtiv Ba'be Ze'ev Yitraf. HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up Mordechai and Esther from Shevet Binyamin to be the counterpoint, to be the ones to be victorious and save us from the other Ze'ev. And remember I said that this pasuk can be read both ways. Binyamin Ze'ev Yitraf, Binyamin is the wolf that devours, or Binyamin is going to devour a wolf. The Midrash plays it both ways. Binyamin is the wolf that devours the wolf, and the wolf is our enemies. Now, the play on the words itself, that's one thing. But what seems pretty clear is that Chazal are establishing that at the very beginning of our national existence, because when Yaakov is on his deathbed with his sons around him and they already have multiple generations of kids, we've now gone from a small family to a large tribe that's developing into a nation, and a nation that now is going to have different members of different tribes serve different purposes in the national existence, Yehuda, etc., and Yosef, everybody's going to serve their purpose, that he's giving Binyamin a purpose, and Binyamin's purpose is going to be at the end of this period to be the one to defend against the Ze'ev, and that is Haman. So now we look back through Sefer Bereshit, we will find several linguistic connections between Bereshit and Esther, which Chazal pick up on in the Midrash. One example, and it's an example that really it's the only two places in Tanakh where this word shows up. When Yosef is sitting on his throne, still not revealed to his brothers. The brothers come and they bring, this is the second visit, they bring Binyamin. And Yosef says, Hazeh Achichem HaKaton, source 2. Hazeh Achichem HaKaton Asher Martem Eli, is this that young brother you told me about? And I guess they say, yes. Vayomar Elohim Yochlecha B'ni, God should have grace on you. He gives him a bracha. Vayimaher Yosef. Now Yosef has to hurry up because he's sitting in front of them. Ki nechmeru rachamav el achiv. He suddenly is filled with compassion for Binyamin. Vayivakesh livkot. He wants to cry. Vayavo achad ravayev kshama. So he goes into his private room and he weeps there. So he has to quickly get out so they don't see him weeping because he's still playing possum. Now he washes his face and he comes out. So I think he went to the bathroom, whatever. He restrains himself. Vayitapak restrains himself, meaning emotionally, because he wants to have an outburst of compassion and crying, but he holds it in because that's not part of his plan. And he says, put the food down, right? And we're going to have. This word, Vayita Pak, is a word that only shows up one other place in Tanakh, and it shows up in Megillat Esther. In sort of a reverse form, when Haman is at the first party, the first feast given for Ahasuerus and Haman alone, and at that party he finds out that there's yet another feast in his honor the next night. Vayitzei Haman bayom ahu sameach v'tov lev. He walks out of the party feeling very good. Sees Mordechai, doesn't bow, doesn't move, doesn't nothing. He becomes filled with rage. If Haman is to act on his rage, he realizes he's going to blow his plan. Because in the meantime, he wants it to appear that the decree comes from Achashverosh, and he has nothing to do with it. So what does he do? Vait apak Haman. Haman restrains himself. The exact same word we saw with Yosef. Vayavo el beito. Now notice, when did Yosef vayit apak? When he saw Binyamin. When did Haman vayit apak? When he saw Binyamin, Mordechai. Mordechai Binyamin. And what does he do? He goes to his house, he calls his family together, just like Yosef sits down a meal with his family. So there's these parallels that exist, but this parallel seems to be a little bit weak, but we're going to see it get stronger. In the meal, this is now subsequently, this is after Yosef reveals himself, and he then gives gifts to his brothers before they go back to collect Yaakov. It says the Chulam Natan La'ish Chalifot Smalot. He gave them all suits, clothing. Ulevinyamin Natan Shlosh Miot Kesef. B'chamesh Chalifot Smalot. What did he give Binyamin? 300 pieces of silver. I have to say where that's coming from. B'chamesh Chalifot Smalot. Five suits. Why is he giving Binyamin five suits of clothes? How many suits do you need? Now, let me look at me, let us stare again. At the end of this period, this is the beginning of the period. Now, at the end of the period, take a look at Mordechai's crowning, and I mean the pun deliberately, Mordechai's crowning moment. This is when Esther, well, Haman has been killed, and Esther comes before the king with Mordechai and explains that Mordechai is her cousin, and Mordechai gets elevated to the position, and we have a Mordechai parade. This is not the original Mordechai parade when everybody was still in secret and Haman led him through the streets. Haman ain't leading anybody anywhere anymore. Mordechai yatzam lifnei ha'melech bevush malchut tchelet, one, v'chur, two, v'ater zahav, three, dolav, v'tachrich butz v'yargaman, four, v'yargaman, five. Five kinds of clothes that Mordechai wears, fancy clothes. Now, at this point, we're not going to necessarily see the connection, but we're going to see it a little further on. When we get to the story of Binyamin. And the Binyamin story in Egypt is a tragic story, almost a tragic story. It takes everything to get Binyamin to be able to come down, to get Yaakov to release him and come down. They come down, and Yosef sees him, and Yosef Vayitapak restrains himself. Then they have a meal, and they get drunk. And Yaakov and Yosef seats them in birth order, and there's all these strange little hints that he knows who they are. And then he sends them off on their way. Everybody, meaning Binyamin, is not held back, and Shimon is released from prison. They're all sent. And he then tells his steward to hide his cup in Binyamin's bag. We all know the story. They leave town, and then he sends a different officer after them to go and accuse them and find the cup. And he catches up with them. Look at Pasuk Zion. Why would you say such things? God forbid we would do such a thing. Why would you say such things? God forbid we would do such a thing. God forbid that we would steal something from you. And by the way, this should remind us of yet an earlier story, which is Rachel and the Trafim and Lavan. When he found our money back in our bags, we brought it back. Why would we steal silver or gold? We prove ourselves to be honest. Excellently honest. And by the way, this is exactly what Yaakov said. Remember? Wherever the Trafim are found, that person will die. And Rachel dies. He said, wherever it's found, that person will die, and the rest of us will be your slave. He says, yes, you're right, meaning I'm accepting what you're saying, but not exactly. Whoever it's found with will die, and the rest of you will be slaves, but rather, whoever it's found with will be my slave, and the rest will go free. And of course, you know what happens. So they all put their saddlebags down, they open them up, and of course, the drama is great. They start looking in Reuven's and they end up with the last one. They were almost there and they find it in Binyamin's bag. What do? They tear their clothes. They tear their clothes. Now, by the way, they tore their clothes is an interesting little twist within Bereishit. Because if you remember, when they threw Yosef in the pit, what did they do? They took his garment. They dipped it in blood, goat's blood, sent it to Yaakov, and said, do you recognize it? What did Yaakov do? Vayikra Yaakov simlotav. There seems to be a midah keneged midah. You caused father to tear his clothes. because of his young son, who he thought was gone. Now you're going to tear your clothes because you think the next one of those is now going to be gone. What last bit from Bereshit is going even further back when Yaakov is in his house growing up and he steals the bracha from Esav. And Esav comes to father for the bracha, and father gets all worried and concerned because he realizes what happened. Ve'echarad Yitzchak charagadah gula, source 8. Ad mi'od ve'yomer mi'efo, atzad sayid ve'yaviliv, ocham mi'ko etern tavo baruchehu, gam baruchiyah. The guy who came here before you with the food got the bracha. He gets the bracha. Kishmoa Esav divrei aviv, v'yitzak tzeaka gula umara. What does Esav do when he hears it? He gives a very big, bitter cry. Now, notice all the pieces here. What's actually happening in the family? Yaakov himself has caused his own brother to cry terribly. Yaakov then, and again, having to do with disguise, Yaakov is now the victim of a disguise, and his sons cause him to tear his clothes. And then what happens? Yosef is playing possum, and nobody knows who he is, and the brothers have to tear kriya for Binyamin. It's going around. And look what happens when Mordechai hears about the decree. It all comes home. When Mordechai hears about the decree in Shushan, Mordechai yadat kol asher nasah. Vayikra Mordechai bgadav vayobash sak vayefer. Mordechai tears his clothes. Binyamin tears his clothes. And he puts on sackcloth and ashes. Vayitze b'tochayir. He goes out in the streets of the city. He gives a loud, bitter cry. Just Esav did. Now, this could all look like, okay, so things like that happen. Watch what the Midrash does here. Start with Vayitapak. Remember, we talked about Yosef restraining himself and not crying after he cried a little bit, coming back out, restraining himself, and not showing emotion with the whole Binyamin piece. Rabbanan Amri Siman Levanav. The Rabbanan say this restraint was a siman to the children, to the next generation, generations down the pike. Kishem shenitapek Yosef al Binyamin, kach nitapek Haman al Mordechai. Shayami Binyamin. Shenemar v'itapak Haman. Just like Yosef restrained himself and didn't show emotion around Binyamin, similarly Haman, it's wild because Haman now is playing the role of Yosef. Haman will restrain himself in the presence of Mordechai, who was a Binyamin. Ukashem shenit yashva da'ato b'simat lechem. How was Yosef calmed down? They had a meal. Took his mind off it. Kach nin yashva da'at Mordechai b'simat lechem. And that's also how Mordechai got his peace of mind. Why? Shmitoch mishten yitran Haman b'oto yom. What happened later that the next day? Haman went to a party. There's food at the party. And that's where Haman ultimately found his end. Now, when Yosef is sitting with his brothers, he gives Binyamin more stuff. This is before he reveals himself. He gives Binyamin more stuff than the other brothers, which, by the way, if you think about it, is a terrible idea. Yosef ended up where he was because father favored him, and now he's favoring Binyamin. Binyamin siman levanav. So how does the Midrash read it? Binyamin is an indicator for the future. Just like Binyamin got more stuff than the other brothers, kach Esther shaita bat bino. Esther is, after all, Binyamin's granddaughter, great 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 granddaughter. Nishtaneh l'tov b'kabalat matanot mishar nashim. Meaning, when she was in the palace, Hegai gave her the best stuff. In other words, to be Binyamin means to be favored, but that's not always true. Often that was the opposite. Look at what happened in Pilegesh B'givah. But the point here is that the Esther story, and I'm not going to use a new term here, is redeeming, is completing, is closing the circle of Sefer Bereshit. That all of these things that get started in Bereshit and are left open, Binyamin Ze'ev Yitrov, who is it that Binyamin's going to attack and save us from? That Yosef's interaction with Binyamin never gets resolved. Yaakov causing Esav to cry And then Yaakov having to tear his clothes and the brother having to tear clothes. Where does that get resolved? And Chazal say it all gets resolved in Megillat Esther. That's when all of this comes to an end. All the circles of Reshit come to an end. Look at the Gemara says, famous Midrash Bavli. After Yosef reveals himself and the brothers are going to go home to pick up Yaakov, he gives them gifts. He gives them suits and he gives Binyamin five suits. Remember we said, why five suits? Imagine, Yosef suffered from extra clothing, the Ketonet Pasim. Why would he do this? Right, the Amar Rav Achsam, Amar Rav Chama, Ragui, Amar Rav, famous statement of Rav: Bishvil Nishgal Shnei Slayim Milat Shalziv Yaakov VeYosef Mishar Echad Galad Rav Yadu Avotein Al Mitzrayim. We ended up as slaves in Mitzrayim because of the little favoritism that Yaakov showed Yosef in giving him that coat. Why would Yosef do the same thing? Amar Rabbi Binyamin Ben Yafet Remez Ramazlo that Yosef was giving a hint to Binyamin. You know, I'm giving you five clothes. Ramazlo shatid ben latzeit mimenu sheitzei mifnei hamelech v'chamishal v'gushei malchut. You're going to have a descendant who's going to walk proudly, march proudly in front of the king with five special garments. U'mordechai yatzav mifnei hamelech. Notice what we do with the tearing of the clothes. The Midrash says, Amar l'makadosh baruch hu, source 14, Atem garamtem likru'ei begadim likru'a begdei avichem, b'davar shel chinam. You caused your father to tear his clothes for nothing when you made him think Yosef was dead. Kach tikru atem al dvar shel chinam. Similarly, you're going to tear for nothing. Binyamin is really not going to be in trouble. You'll tear anyways. And Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Ashvatim karu al Binyamin. Lefichach yatzad menu Mordechai shekara al Yisrael. Watch what happens. All of the members of Am Yisrael, the Hainu, his brothers, tore because of Binyamin. And now it's the circle gets closed when Mordechai, at the end of this period, tears his clothes on behalf of all of Am Yisrael in Megillat Esther. We come to the end of this piece. The Midrash, famous Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah, I'll just summarize it, says when Esav gave the big cry, if anybody says that God overlooks things, anybody who says, God, lets things go, God will let you go. He's very, very patient, but then he collects. He, Yaakov, caused his own brother to give a big cry. Where was the payback? In Shushan, when Esav's descendant causes Binyamin, God's Yaakov's descendant, Mordechai, to give a big cry. One more thing I want to show you. And then just a comment to bring it together. The Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah parallels the story of Yosef and Mrs. Potiphar with the story of Mordechai. I've talked about this in the past in the context of why Mordechai didn't bow down. But the Midrash goes further. Just like Yosef has the king's ring, Mordechai gets the king's ring. Just like Yosef has all of these fancy clothes, Mordechai has all these fancy clothes. Just like Yosef rides in the chariot of the king. Similarly, same thing happens with Mordechai. He's ridden on the horse. And just like there's a cry of Avrech when Yosef comes out, there's a cry, Kachay Aseleish, that Haman gives when Mordechai comes out. The Midrash in so many ways, and you can see one last example here in Source 19. Identifies themes that course through Bereishit, mainly from Yaakov on, as finding their conclusion, their resolution, if you will, in the story of Megillat Esther. And I believe that what the point that the Midrash is trying to make is that Megillat Esther, the story of Esther and the period of Esther, is the conclusion of a historic epic, which really starts with Avraham, but starts really begadol with Yaakov. That the beginning and the formation of our nation as a nation that has the direct and clear and explicit interaction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that period of youth, that period of adolescence, whatever you might want to call it in our nation's history, comes to a close in Megillat Esther when God finally goes behind the curtain and operates from then on throughout history from behind the curtain. And as such, the story of Megillat Esther carries with it all sorts of closings and resolutions to stories that get begun during the period of Breshit, something which I believe Chazal were very sensitive to. And as such, in many Midrashim, many more than we have on these source sheets, in many Midrashim made that connection. And that's why they say that just like the Esther is called Ayelat HaShachar, because just like Shachar is the end of the night, similarly, Esther is Sof Kol HaNisim. It's an end of that period when all of these things are resolved.